So when you talk about traffic, what are you seeing in the differences between Google for Jobs traffic versus organic?
Yeah, so Google for Jobs traffic is much higher than organic.
Hide your kids. Lock the doors. You're listening to HR's most dangerous podcast. Chad Soash and Joel Cheeseman are here to punch the recruiting industry right where it hurts. Complete with breaking news, brash opinion, and loads of snark. Buckle up, boys and girls. It's time for the Chad and Cheese podcast.
Oh, yeah. Let's get to the bottom of this crypto question, shall we? Welcome, everybody. I am Joel Cheeseman, co-host of your favorite podcasts, joined as always by my co-host, Chad Soash. This is the Chad and Cheese podcast, and today we welcome Aaron Stewart, founder and CVO of Job.com. CVO means Chief Victory Officer, Chief Visionary Officer.
They take the pandemic serious. This is the Chief Viral Officer of Job.com. They take this shit.
Correct. It's a newly invented role. That's what it is.
Visionary, right?
Visionary, Chief Visionary Officer. Yeah.
That's sexy. Chief Visionary Officer. Very nice.
Beautiful.
Very nice. Welcome back, Aaron. You agreed to come on the show even as Texas fades into the sunset. You're out of power. You have no water. Like, you're in a hotel room.
Correct.
What's the state of Texas right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty sorry affair. And obviously, you know, all jokes aside, there are a lot of people, vulnerable people, that are actually kind of in some trouble right now, which is kind of worrying. But so we should acknowledge that. But fortunately, my wife and my children and I are now in a hotel. But yeah, we've been without power and without water for a week, power on and off throughout the week. And and we're still in the hotel because the utilities aren't back up and
running.
And
tell them how many kids you have, Aaron.
4.2 billion children by the feels of things. No, I have five kids, everybody, and they're aged from 11 right through to 1 year old. So as you can imagine, not being able to have any water, bathrooms, washing bottles. It's been a pretty brutal week. So
came obviously from across the pond and tell our listeners what you told us.
My naive assumption was that being kind of the richest state in the richest country in the world, that 6 inches worth of snow wouldn't be enough to throw it over. But obviously it is more than enough to throw it over for an entire week. And obviously being British, I'm used to terrible weather about 99.9% of the time. I was not pleasantly surprised to see everything kind of fall apart so much. And I think, in all honesty, listening to the governor, I think it's a little bit embarrassing for Texas in some respects, because, you know,
blaming it on renewable energy was probably a bad decision.
What a douchebag.
I mean,
as was Ted Cruz going to Cabo or Cancun or wherever,
Ted Cruz. I mean, what are you doing, man? I know what I'll do. Middle of a crisis, we'll just go to Cancun.
That's what Churchill did in World War II, wasn't it? He went to Cabo or Bora Bora. Where was it?
Yeah.
I'm getting the fuck out of here. Forget these air raids.
Yeah. But one thing's for sure, I would not have missed the Chad and Cheese show for anything.
Oh, what a suck up. Very nice.
Smart.
We got questions, Aaron, so buckle up.
I'm sure,
buddy.
You do.
Questions, sucker. Yeah. Well, Joel, go ahead and roll that beautiful bean footage. Let's get right into it.
All right. Well, let's set up this soundbite. This was from Deathmatch 2 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
In Austin, Texas. Yeah. And you had sort of painted a picture of a lot of acquisitions and agencies and whatnot. So let's go to this, and then we'll sort of dig into the soundbite.
Based on some numbers that we projected, like we're enrolling up companies at the moment. So I'm buying out staffing agencies as we speak. We bought 3 staffing agencies this month.
Ouch!
No, I'm glad that you've done this, because it's the perfect opportunity to explain.
That's why you come on.
Yeah, no, it's true. And this is the first thing, gents, thank you for calling it out, because I know that there are other people that would have been in the show that may have also have heard that and be like, well, what's going on? To be honest, I mean, so throughout my career, I have actually bought many staffing companies and recruitment tech businesses. And it's the first time in my career that I've ever got to the point where, you have an agreed letter of intent, so an LOI with an agreed valuation on the business, multiples, preliminary due diligence that has all been agreed and signed, and then you go through what's called a deeper dive due diligence to close the deal up. And all three of those LOIs, and actually others, all fell over in 2020. And the reason for that, as you can imagine, all COVID related. Every single one of those businesses that we were buying were being valued on what's called trailing 12, for trailing 12 months worth of EBITDA. The first quarter of last year, through, you know, a lot of the businesses that we were buying's trailing 12, some of them went to no profitability from their trailing 12 because they made such major losses in the first quarter. Others just were reduced so greatly that they didn't want to sell anymore. They'd rather wait, ride the storm out. It was a learning lesson for me as a leader and a person that's bought many businesses that actually, even at the point of an agreed LOI, they can still fall over, because I've never seen that in my career. But then I've never seen COVID-19 in my career either. But sadly, that was the reason. So we had those businesses acquired up, ready to go, funds in place, deals agreed, going through deep due diligence. The last quarter of 2019 was slow completing them on a couple of bits, and then hit into 2020 and the deals fell over. And we were very more devastated for the entrepreneurs. These are small business owners that in their mind had psychologically sold their business, had now gone from not just selling their business, but were in trying to make it survive. And I'm sure they'll be listening to this. And hopefully, guys, if you're trading 12s back up, please come back to us. So that's what happened.
Okay. So as you know, we're on top of this on the show. So we're counting two acquisitions recently. We got Higher Vergence and most recently Talenting. Are there any that we missed?
No, there's none that you've missed. But I can say, at the moment, fingers crossed, we do have three staffing agencies that have all finished, that were all agreed their LOIs now last September, and they're all in the very, very final stages of their deep dive due diligence and should be closing end of Q1, so end of March. So there'll be three more acquisitions being publicly announced. They're all staffing companies, all based in healthcare. One's an RPO, and one's based in light industrial and sales and marketing recruitment.
So for those who don't remember, briefly describe the Higher Vergence acquisition and why that was necessary. And then I think we have some questions about Talenting.
Sure. So Higher Vergence is a cybersecurity based contract staffing agency. Those guys, the owners there, the original owners, did an exceptional job of riding through the COVID-19 pandemic. And as you can imagine, cybersecurity was one of those industries. On the perm side, direct hire was affected, but on the contract side, pretty much remained unpunished. So they were actually a deal that we'd concluded as an LOI at the beginning of 2020. So we closed them up. It was our first completion of a true staffing acquisition from money handed over. Now it's our company, and we're delighted to have them. They've been an amazing acquisition and have grown very well, actually, since our acquisition of them working with us. And specialist niche, but at the same time, they have some really, really great clients that also have further expanded IT recruitment needs. Go on.
So, Aaron, when we talked about, obviously, the business model of Job.com, the one of the main reasons for buying up these staffing organizations is to get the actual technology up under them. But we haven't seen that with Higher Vergence yet. It doesn't even look like they're running Job.com tech on their website. And when I dug deep into the jobs on Higher Vergence, they weren't even on Job.com. So when is that going to happen? And how long does it actually take to get a small staffing firm up and running on Job.com?
Yeah, that's a great question. So our strategy for acquisition is the first 90 days of taking a business over is do no harm. So you do the first 90 days, do no harm. So you don't do anything to their company. You just get working within it, the mechanics of it. You win the hearts and minds of the existing recruiters and the consultants there, because one of the biggest impacts when you acquire a company is called change management. And change management can see your best talent walk straight out the door, and there goes your asset. But we actually took a bit longer with Higher Vergence, and the reason for that was a couple of things. The pandemic has presented a more complex landscape, and also their technical infrastructure and the way that Higher Vergence works is a lot more particular than, let's say, a more standard generic staffing agency. So High Vergence attracts most of its placements through network. It's not out there necessarily like sourcing or syndicating or advertising on various different platforms. They are very much a network-based solution. But what I can say is that we're kind of in the final stages now of their first preliminary technical integration with us. We did take longer with it. No doubt about it, gents. Mainly because, as well, it's our first acquisition here in the US as a staffing company. And I will tell you that by the beginning of Q2, you'll begin to see a pretty major impact on High Vergence visually and also within their operation. I'd love to give credit to them as a team. They've been amazing joining us, and obviously our president of staffing, Steve O'Brien, at our end, who is a recruitment and technical wizard, is doing a fantastic job with them as a company, especially considering, you know, it's still a fairly difficult time in the recruitment industry with the current climate. So navigating a much more complex storm than we first anticipated. So yeah, we've just taken a little bit longer with this one, playing it safe.
Well, let's talk about Job.com real quick before we jump into talenting. It seems, you know, you guys have turned into more of an aggregator. Taking AppCast feeds. I mean, just really standard aggregator type of technology. And again, back to the business model, you guys are looking to try to build a job seeker, really talent community within itself. That's going to be hard, driving people off the site.
Is the credit card gone?
No, it's not actually, no. So we took it away. So Joe, I've got some interesting stats for you though, which I think you might find quite fascinating. So yeah, it's a great question. So we structured the site last year to focus heavily on SEO. So, you know, we're sat on job.com, as I'm sure you gents can imagine. That URL has been in the public domain for a very long time. We do a lot of press and PR. So we have a very, very strong domain authority as a platform. And as we started to analyze, and this was a bit of a pivot last year in relation to COVID-19, was, you know, we really need to be taking advantage of just the vast quantities of candidates that are out there looking for work. And also we need to be conscious that if we're only focusing on our internal staffing jobs, that's not enough of a job experience for someone to sign up to the site, get matches, get some level of experience with us. So as a kind of quick user experience, what you'll see is we've created a top of funnel strategy, which is, yep, we aggregate job content from AppCast and all the other, you know, usual suspects in the market that we all know. We optimize that content for the purposes of SEO. We also match those jobs to all of our job seekers. And we actually use, every time someone clicks on a job they get matched to, we use that as a machine learning opportunity. So that's constantly feed the ML of what they select out of our matches is constantly feeding back into our AI. And ultimately, you know, we make revenue selling CPC out of that by giving job seekers an experience where if they can't find a staffing role with through job.com or one of the portfolio companies that we own or will own, then we at least give them something, a breadcrumb of service or use case within the platform that gives them opportunity, right? And but at the same time allows us to kind of cast a wide net out into Google and generate candidates towards the site. You know, give you an example, our organic SEO grew by 130% in December and then 130% again in January, compounded because, just as an example, because job.com is just such a legacy URL. So it really does have a great impact in Google. It allows us to attract job seekers for free. It also allows us to look at where the job seeking market is as we try and determine which staffing assets, which staffing agencies we may go and acquire. Because, you know, building up pockets of talent, communities and base in there that can be used for placements is also another strategy. We still do have the card, gents. We still do offer the rewards. It's now a feature rather than just the headline. But I will tell you, we got more people sign up to job.com and register when we had the card on the front than we do with the job seeking experience. We literally did. And I'm like, I'm not going to swear, but I'm going to be like, you are joking me. But what I will say is that is, yes, we did get more signups, but we do get more physical revenue generating activity out of out of job seekers utilizing kind of the job board functionality.
Do you have any idea how much of your traffic is direct people just typing in job.com?
Oh yeah, there's actually, yeah, it's quite a bit actually. And I will say, the word job, as I'm sure you can all appreciate, is a university translatable word. So it's understood in many countries and many languages. So we do get a lot of international white noise, you know, where people like job, and we just, you know, they instantly find job.com, or they just type in job into their browser and job.com comes up, which, you know, it's cool. We welcome everyone to the site. We're delighted to have people come to job.com. But at the same time, sometimes that, you know, transparency, that can impact the quality of the traffic that's coming through to us. It can be, you know, it's kind of difficult sending traffic away that maybe has no visa to work in the United States, for example. You know, we welcome them as a visit, but we can't really do anything with them, sadly.
We'll get back to the interview in a minute. But first, we have a question for Andy Katz, COO of Next.
For clients that are sort of married to email, what would you tell them in terms of the metrics versus text messaging?
It really depends on the audience you're trying to reach. I'm not going to even tell you text messaging is the right tool for every type of audience. You know, you're not going to reach a VP or senior level person necessarily through text. You're going to reach more of those hourly workers, more of the gig economy, more of anybody that's on their feet all day long. So again, you know, you got to break out email and text in two different categories. And sometimes, depending on the audience, the best thing to do is hit them with both of them. And it reinforces the message, the brand that's coming across. They'll know who the company is. And it's like any other commercial or podcast. You know, you might have to listen to it a few times before it resonates and it sinks in. I believe it's the same thing with text versus email versus any other form of communication.
For more information, go to hiring.next.com. Remember, that's next with the double X, not the triple X. Hiring.next.com.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
So when you talk about traffic, what are you seeing in the differences between Google for Jobs traffic versus organic?
Yeah, so Google for Jobs traffic's much higher than organic. So, and you know, just transparent. I mean, we feed straight into Google for Jobs, and we also do, you know, Google Console, Sitemap, the usual, you know, as many landing pages as we can physically get to be indexed into Google. But one thing's very clear is Google's strategy of navigating people through their own job search solution. It reminds me of Indeed all over again, right? They're going to go from free to freemium, right? They're going to sucker everyone's jobs in, gain all the usability off of it, and then suddenly go, hey, pay us or die, you know? And yeah. And I guarantee that's going to happen, right? I don't doubt for a second, which is, so if I'm being brutally honest, gents, as a small business, we are shoehorning our way through various strategies to kind of guide job.com forward, but with the ultimate goal of just becoming an ultimately focused data-driven digital staffing company. But at the moment, you know, we're utilizing the assets that we have, which is job.com is great at capturing stuff for SEO. It has a good rapport with Google and Google for Jobs, so we'll capture users there. And we're just leveraging what we can, why we can.
Shoehorning is a good word. And I think Indeed is busy doing that with a lot of other things. we refer to it as throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks. So let's talk about talenting. Why the move? How'd the deal go down? And then I want to dig into blockchain a little bit. But set the table with why you guys acquired this company and why it was smart for your strategy.
Yeah, sure. So we have two proprietary pieces of technology that Job.com focuses on. So one is AI. You know, we are very focused on artificial intelligence and have been for, you know, 8 years now. Before it was Job.com, when it was My Job Matter in the UK. And the other part is the utilization of blockchain technology within our tech stack and process. So the guys at Talenting, CEO there, Bill Inman, and I have been, you know, friends for a number of years. And him and I have been the kind of keynote speakers at SIA for blockchain for a number of years as well. We've done various panels together. And, you know, they went at a route where they were looking to utilize blockchain for compliance and also to create an ecosystem where people could validate their credentials, to which I'm very pro the whole validation of credentials piece. But the utilization of blockchain truly for us is about trying to help with two things. One, diversity, and two, compliance. So I'll explain the diversity piece. We like to say that we're a diversity, you know, tech-driven business, and have been for some time. It's not just jumping on the bandwagon from everything that went on last year. We've been publishing articles out about this, which I'm happy to share with anyone listening, for a number of years. I come from Luton Town, North London, which is a highly diverse area, and I'm passionate about it. We utilize blockchain to allow us to anonymize data going through the hiring process. So there was a research report done in 2016. There's a page on job.com that talks all about it, that showed an African-American resume and a Caucasian white resume, identical resume, going into the job market. And the Caucasian white resume name, that resume got 150% more phone calls back from recruiters in 2016. So I'm under no illusion that that unconscious bias within the hiring managers potentially, or recruiters, is still existent 5 years later. So we utilize blockchain to allow us to anonymize the sociodemographic data out of a resume, but allow the hirer to know that this person is validated. They are who they say they are. They have done what they say they have. You just don't need to know their sex. You don't need to know their name. You don't need to know their race. You don't need to know that stuff when it comes to the hiring side. And so that's what we utilize in blockchain for, as one component.
Do you need blockchain for all that?
Yeah, this exists without blockchain, right? Yeah,
you can do it without blockchain, but I think sometimes people think blockchain's maybe more than it is. A private Hyperledger Fabric blockchain on Amazon Web Services, you could set up in an afternoon. It's as easy as pie. I mean, I think sometimes people get so wrapped up thinking blockchain's this mysterious, complex voodoo. It really isn't. It's just a server infrastructure for security. And we just choose to use it. Talentin has two patents. They've got one patent granted, now Job.com does, which is for storing a career record in association with biometrics. Okay, so we utilize face, fingerprint, password and PIN, and store that record, your career record, with that association. So it's, Joel, it's got your face and this is your resume and it's on a private Hyperledger Fabric. So now we've definitely proven it's you. And now, you know, so we have a patent around that. And then the second patent, which is still pending, which we acquired too, is career scoring, which is where you can provide a level of scoring behind, did this person really work at this company? And did they really do this job? And did they really get this reference? And we've been working on an ecosystem to create kind of, you know, that referencing piece built within job.com for a little while now. It's still not finished, won't be finished until 2022. But it's all part of the data-driven digital staffing piece. So yeah, we just choose to use blockchain for that application. Yeah.
Help me understand, as a job seeker, the default is typically to advertise as much as possible. I'm looking for a job, so I'm going to market myself accordingly. My profile is going to be available on LinkedIn. My resume is going to be everywhere. And then blockchain comes in, and I think I understand it as a layman why that's important for money, maybe for, you know, sensitive data like healthcare or my social security number or things that I don't want to get out. But my personal data or my resume, I want it to be public. So blockchain ends up to me sounding very just sort of soup du jour kind of thing to help me to like be a shiny object of, oh, this is good. But I have a hard time as a regular job seeker understanding why I should care whether a job site is blockchain or not. Can you help make that clear to me and all of our listeners who are like, why is blockchain relevant to job search?
Yeah, and I think it's a fabulous observation. And I think it's one that's shared commonly amongst a lot of professionals in the space. as a job seeker, you will probably never know that you're running through a blockchain on job.com. And we don't advertise it or sell it to our job seekers, akin to half the technology that's probably going on when you do a Google search. You have no idea as an average user the sort of criteria they're going through to give you that listing. But for whatever reason, in this particular application, it works. Blockchain doesn't hide their resume at all. All it does is it just hides some sensitive material about them that could be related to bias. It could be related to shortlisting someone before their true credentials that matter, which is their experience, their education, and their track record are truly looked at. And as job.com, we've made a conscious decision to utilize the technology to try and help increase the diversity funnel. I would love to be proven wrong and shown that you don't need to do that to help increase diversity, because you know, the ultimate goal is not about proving that we're right with blockchain. It's about proving that we can get a more diverse workforce into the labor market. But, you know, we made a strategic decision at job.com to pursue the blockchain side. But their resume remains public. You could search their resume through job.com. Our recruiters will find their resume. They just won't know whether you're African-American or Hispanic or Asian, or you know, that you're living in the middle of South Central, you know, LA, you could be living anywhere.
Is the background check piece something that you guys are pursuing? Because I do see some relevancy to having sort of a blockchain background check that, you know, this Joe Smith is different than that Joe Smith.
Correct. Yeah. And we certainly are, Joel. And that's, again, a slightly later strategic piece, actually with someone that you guys know quite well, actually, but I can't say yet. So, and I'm not going to say either, because I'll shoot myself in the foot. Already did that death match, so I'm not saying anything. So
acquisitions.
Acquisitions. So, but you know them, guys. So, so we certainly are. I mean, one thing to remember, guys, we acquired job.com 3 years ago. We did a blockchain ICO, if you gents probably cast your mind back, which was sadly a failure for job.com. But we're a fairly new business, you know, we are going out there trying to, you know, be fairly radical with our approach in some respects, fairly, you know, innovative. There are some things and decisions we've made that have not been the right decision. There have been some that have been absolutely the right decision. And we're a learn-it-all organization, not a know-it-all organization. And I quote our COO, Bill Clem, with that. I won't take claim to that saying. He says it to everyone in the business. We're a learn-it-all, not know-it-all. And but we definitely see the practical benefits of blockchain. There's also one other bit, which I'm sure you guys are more than familiar with, especially Chad with your background at Randstad, EEOC records, right? So, you know, we have to have a comprehensive security-based EEOC record as a co-employer. And we choose, as our decision is, we like to use blockchain in order to do that. And create a public blockchain that employers that we've co-employed with can access to, so that, let's say, heaven forbid, job.com wasn't here anymore, then they're not in breach of their compliance. Because how many staffing companies in America have been keeping EEOC records on behalf of their clients who are maybe now no longer here, and their clients have to keep a record for that for 7 years? And if they don't have a record of it because they're relying on their staffing company that's no longer here, they actually have a compliance issue.
My last question, Aaron. Like Indeed Flex, why is job.com competing with the staffing industry instead of becoming the platform for the entire staffing agency? I mean, you can see the opportunity, right? Instead of buying up, and again, there's a lot of resources that goes into buying up staffing organizations and then rolling them up underneath your tech. Why not just be the operating system for all agencies instead of competing with them?
It's a fabulous question, and it is actually one that we have had internally. At the moment, our strategy is certainly, and you know, we've made a decision to be a competitor and to go out to the market as a competitor. And we have, you know, we've got 474 shareholders in job.com. And so, you know, we collectively as a collective shareholder team said, where do we see our position in the market? Where do we see what we want to hit? And, you know, let's be transparent. My passion is to help people feed their families and pay their bills. But at the same time, I have a shareholder obligation to make an ROI. And we have a very intricate, detailed map showing acquisition, layering technology, uplifting acquisition with technology, rinse, repeat, and taking, let's say, $300 or $400 million worth of revenue out of the market per se. And, you know, with our talks of obviously doing a public listing and achieving the ROI that our shareholders invested into, you know, so but there is definitely a compelling argument to say, why not just license this to every recruitment company in the US and follow that strategy? I think what it is that there's quite a crowded room of very sophisticated service providers to the staffing industry. Some very, very great technology out there. I feel that we do a great job at job.com. I think it's more within our control and wheelhouse strategically to go and buy staffing agencies and create a nice, good, data-driven digital staffing company powered with AI and blockchain that is ripe for either an IPO or an acquisition, rather than maybe trying to go directly out into the market and maybe find myself up against someone like a Bullhorn, right through to other different platforms that are out there that would, you know, would definitely give job.com a good run for its money. Let's be brutally honest.
He said the IPO word, kids. Aaron Stewart, everybody.
There he is.
Always a pleasure. Aaron, for our listeners who want to learn more about you or job.com, where would you send them?
I would send them to job.com, or alternatively, I love talking to everybody. Feel free to just hit me up on LinkedIn. You know, I've got a rather peculiar spelling of Aaron, so you can't miss me, or Twitter.
And that's A-R-R-A-N.
Correct.
Aaron. Thanks, dude.
Thanks so much.
Good luck with your busted pipes.
Yeah. Are you going to come and help fix them, gents? Hey,
no,
that's
right. We are not.
We pay our taxes and have maintenance already.
We're out.
Thank you for listening to, what's it called? The podcast. The Chad. The Cheese. Brilliant. They talk about recruiting. They talk about technology. But most of all, they talk about nothing. Just a lot of shout-outs of people you don't even know. And yet, you're listening. It's incredible. And not one word about cheese. Not one. Cheddar. Blue. Nacho. Pepper Jack. Swiss. So many cheeses, and not one word. So weird. Anywho, be sure to subscribe today on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That way, you won't miss an episode. And while you're at it, visit www.chadcheese.com. Just don't expect to find any recipes for grilled cheese. It's so weird. We out!
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit, its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.